And so they really need that running back, right?
Yeah.
So if you guys are following my lead here, this is where the Bucks are going to be taking Saquon.
Okay.
All right.
That's who I see them taking.
Surprise. So he can be eating W's with Jameis Winston down
I think Jameis Winston needs, in the words of Kendrick, sit down and be a little humble. I think Saquon's going to do it for him because they're going to have less Jameis Winston throwing the ball and more Saquon running.
Which is great for them because the less you put on Jameis Winston, the better he's going to be. He's not a carry the load type decision maker, I feel like.
Worst compliment you give anyone. Right? Yeah. Like, hey man, the less you touch the ball, the happier we're going to be.
He's definitely an above average quarterback, don't get me wrong.
I just think if you take some of that pressure on them to run a franchise at 24.
Yeah, when your running back is Jaquizz Rodgers, who isn't a three down back. I agree. Yeah, so Saquon to the Bucks. I think they have a pretty decent offensive line. They just had some weird offensive struggles last season that I don't think anyone really saw coming. I thought they were going to level out, and they really didn't do too well there towards the end. So,
want to real quick just give a big shout out to our man Grant, coming in, saving the day, giving us a working microphone so we don't have to all be holding hands here. It'd be helpful if I turned it on.
John probably doesn't like my breath over here. I just had Frankie's happy hour, so
there you go.
Had some nice basil breath going on.
All right, let's get to what are we on? 8.
We're on 8 here. This is with the Bears. There's been a lot of speculation, too, of the Bears trading down because they're kind of in that hardcore reset mode. They got Mitch Trubisky, but Kevin White really hasn't played out for them as a wide receiver. But I don't have him trading down. I didn't really do any trade downs in this top 10. Kind of just keeping it a little more simple over here.
Todd McShay for you, huh?
Yeah, no, I'm not a Todd McShay kind of guy.
you're like flipping the strip on all these guys right now.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, yeah, they're going to hear this, and they're going to be like, some kid from Chico, California, this is what he thinks about the draft.
I can't wait to compare, after the draft happens, your board to their boards. And
none of them right.
Right? So at 8, the Bears, they definitely are in need of a few things. I think, honestly, they need the O-line the most, though. Quentin Nelson's already off the board. I think the next best piece for offensive lines is Billy Price. Billy Price, he reminds me of the Pouncey twins. He's kind of shorter, a little more, but he's above average athletics. He's really good. I think he can really secure that center or a guard spot. He can kind of fill in on those three spots, left guard,
right
guard.
Where is he coming out of?
I remember correctly, I didn't write down the schools for these guys.
Statman Brad's on it, don't worry about it.
Yeah, his name's Billy Price.
So that's number 8.
It's number 8.
All right. Quick break for station identification. Ohio State. This is FM 90.1 KZFR. Chico, California. People-powered radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you are listening to Talking About Practice. We are counting it down, baby. We got the draft in, what, 2 weeks? Week and a half.
Nine days.
Wow. Okay. So, you heard it here first, people. Matt Schroll has your official big board top 10 picks of the NFL draft.
Yeah, so we just talked about number 8, Chicago Bears picking Billy Price out of Ohio State. I appreciate that over there.
That's what he does best.
Yeah. They're looking for that O-line. So pick 9, I think this is going to kind of dazzle a lot of people, too. Because I haven't talked about the star yet that everyone talked about in the beginning when draft talk started. So 9, we got Niners. They're letting their man, Jimmy Ward, test the market. They need to fill in some spots in the secondary.
Yes.
I think the best piece now that Denzel Ward is off the board is going to be Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Okay.
I think that's who they're going to take.
Out of Bama?
Out of Bama. He's shown himself to be a proven leader. They need a leader. They're tired of these guys coming in here with domestic violence issues, alcoholism, drug-related issues. You know, and I know the Niners, and I know the Raiders, I know all these teams, they don't care. You smoke a load of pot, whatever. We'll move on with our lives. But the moment you get pulled over for a DUI, the moment you hit your wife or your girlfriend, they're done.
Yeah.
Right.
And Minkah Fitzpatrick, he doesn't seem like that kind of a guy. He's definitely a leader. He's a great player. He's
inside-out kind of guy, right? He played corner and a little bit of safety.
And safety. They could even they could even have him fill in as a hybrid linebacker safety.
Oh, wow.
Rushing. I could see him doing that.
He's that dynamic.
Yeah, he's extremely
I'll take
dynamic.
It. Now you got me excited.
Yeah. So I think the Niners, I think they're definitely going to take Minkah. I think it's going to be a good year for the Niners secondary for sure. And after the season they had last season, it'll definitely be interesting. So,
you don't think that they need to address some of their offensive line for Christ Garoppolo's safety?
I feel like you need to keep your savior alive.
With the two best O linemen off the board, they don't want to draft any O line until the second round. So
okay. Any room. Okay. Well, I'm glad you don't have a microphone right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Yeah. You might not get one back today. But this is the performance you're giving us. All right. And number 10. Hold on. Drum roll.
Number 10, the Raiders. I think they've made it extremely clear what they're going to do with the draft. They didn't re-sign Navarro Bowman, who was their leading tackler. He helped with their only interception last season. And they didn't re-sign him. Reggie McKenzie, as a Raider fan, what are you doing? Roquan Smith's already off the board. They're going to take the next best talent, which is Tremaine Edmonds. He's young. They can mold him into what they want to be. He can kind of be their Dante Hightower or their Swiss Army knife, you know, the jack-of-all-trades linebacker. He can cover. He can blitz. He can do whatever you want him to do. He's going to be their guy. So.
All right. Yo, so, Joel, where do you see my man Lamar Jackson ending up?
I see him with Arizona.
Oh.
I think so. Arizona's got pretty the injury-prone.
Yes.
Mr. What's his face?
Carson Palmer.
No,
he retired.
Oh, finally.
They picked up
what's his name?
Sam Bradford.
Yeah, Sam Bradford. That's correct. So he hasn't had a full season since the first 3 years of being in the league.
Yeah, I don't think ever.
And I think Lamar Jackson, I think he's going to be better than Deshaun Watson, honestly. I see him peaking over Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson had a crazy good season last season.
He did.
Don't get me wrong. I think that was just a streak. I think he's going to come back off of this injury or not.
ACL leveling the playing field.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, so Sam Bradford's only had 2 full seasons. That was his first season and his 3rd season. After that, the only way he got close was 2016 with 15 games.
Yeah, classic, that's Jeff Fisher. So it's Jeff Fisher, St. Louis teams there.
Oh, yeah.
7-9 stuff.
Did you hear him, by the way, after Sean McVay took over that team and he wanted credit for that roster?
Yep.
I'm so upset. I mean, I was going to say, from probably the biggest loser of the NFL last season was Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
Biggest loser of all time. Like, I was okay, man, you are a terrible quarterback. I'm sorry, coach.
but he still has that mustache, so he's still winning.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't know. Andy Reid's mustache, I like a little better.
Yeah, the walrus.
The walrus.
Yeah.
That one's a solid right there.
I dig it. Yeah. And give us a sleeper pick. Who do you think that no one's really talking about, we haven't heard a lot about, not a lot of press coverage, but someone you think is going to come in and make an immediate impact, and by week 8 or 9 of the NFL season, we'll all know this rookie's name?
Calvin Ridley.
Okay.
Receiver out of Alabama?
Yeah, I think he's going to do really well. It's between, for the receivers, for me, it's always between him and Christian Kirk. None of them are really being talked about. Everyone's dissing on receivers this draft, saying that we don't have strong receivers. Yeah, to a certain extent, I will agree, but I think either those two guys, but mainly Ridley, will for sure come in and have an immediate impact. I think Christian Kirk, maybe on the right team, could. He could fizzle out, though. There's a lot of people in the NFL already like him. Ridley has a little more star potential going on, so.
And I want to give a little shout-out to my boss, Grayson, who just sent me a text on a little hot take saying the Bengals are guaranteed to win the Super Bowl this year.
Okay.
And for Derek never to bring up Carson Palmer's name again.
Oh, does Grayson listen to the show?
So he's a Bengals fan, clearly.
Yes.
All right.
Is it doesn't, like, revere Carson Palmer, or, like, he's, like, dreading him?
He doesn't like Carson.
Okay, well, I'm happy he's gone. I don't want to see him anymore.
I don't like the fact that, as a Raider fan, we traded a first-round pick for him to come off the couch, and we just did an 8-8 season, so.
I want to ask Grayson, is Andy Dalton still their starting quarterback?
And yes.
Then okay.
No.
They're not going anywhere.
Oh, the Red Rock.
They're going to be out in the wild card round, as always. Sorry, Grayson.
But didn't they also let AJ McCarron go? Isn't he with the Bills?
Oh, no.
Yeah, they botched the trade with the Browns.
Yeah. Classic. Classic Bengals.
Yeah. Classic Bungles. Sorry, Grayson. Hopefully you'll trap the quarterback, because the Red Rocket just ain't doing it. You got anything else for us, Troll? Any last tidbits on your way out?
I mean, if you guys want to talk off-season requirements or anything from teams, I study all that kind of stuff, too. But as far as draft goes, no. That's kind of my top 10. I don't think you're going to see too many surprises in this
draft. I'm
going to
be watching the draft, dude, just so I can dissect some.
Well, no, what we're going to do, after the draft, we're taking some time off, but after the draft, we'll have you come back on, and we're just going to ridicule everything you got wrong, and everything you got right, we'll just kind of go.
If there are any. Yeah.
I mean, and I feel like, honestly, I tried my best to look through those smoke screens. I feel a lot of people just kind of see stuff and, you know, the moment they hear an Adam Schefter report come out, they change their draft immediately.
Yeah.
They don't give things time to sit.
But you translate those smoke signals. You see
fluent.
All of them.
Fluent.
That's right.
That's how we communicate here in Chico.
I do want to just give a quick shout out. On that entire list of guys you read off, I knew maybe one of those guys. So I just want to say you're on your stuff, man.
Thank you.
Either he's on his stuff or you're falling off of your stuff.
Yeah. I was never on that stuff. The draft is never something I ever pay attention to.
Drew, if you're ever looking for a new beard in here, because this guy obviously doesn't study.
We may have just found Derek's replacement. All right. Hey, Troll, we appreciate it, brother. Anytime you want to stop by the booth and give us either football or fantasy updates, we're happy to have you.
Yeah, let me know. I just want to give a quick shout-out as well to my main man Juan, a.k.a. Gordo Burrito.
Yes, sir.
The best burritos in town, right, everyone?
Absolutely.
Delicious.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. This is FM 90.1 KZFR, Chico, California. We are people-powered community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the Foothills, and beyond. Want to give a quick shout-out here to, I have a read here. Talking About Practice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Peter Tichichin in association with Baywood Real Estate, a local real estate firm established in 1962. Peter Tichichin and Baywood Real Estate are happy to support community radio and can be reached. Whoa, that came out of nowhere. They can be reached by calling 680-1900 or at chicohomes.com. So thank you to Peter Tichin. Once again, thank you to Matt Truel. He is already a master of the hot take. Yes, sir. Yeah. He came in on fire. He came in prepared. That was awesome. So, again, big thank you to him. And a big thank you to you, the listener, lending us your ears for an hour this evening. I know we got playoff basketball going on right now. So the fact that you would be listening to this and not watching that, what are you doing, first of all? But thank you.
Yeah.
So we appreciate that. But, Derek, do you have some news?
No news today.
Okay. That'd have been good to know. That would have probably been good to know.
I mean, I usually put it on the rundown. If you're looking at it, you'll realize there is no news on there. But that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to say, because we were, you know, talent heavy today.
That's correct.
So I just figured we'd put the news off to the side right there.
No problem.
Yeah.
No problem. Yeah.
Very considerate of you.
Yeah.
Yes. What can I say?
Yeah.
I'm a man of the people.
Way to really spin that so you have less work to do.
Right? It's perfect. I mean, you make it seem like I don't read the news afterwards. Like, just because I don't have the news, it doesn't make, you know, it's part of my day.
Do you have any personal news? Anything going on in your life you want to update us on?
Heading down to L.A. next week. What's up, y'all?
Speaking of which, we will be off next week, so listeners, you should probably know that. Derek will be in L.A. John and I will be in, where will we? We don't even know where we'll be next Monday.
Only the road.
It's not going to be next Monday. It's going to be like the Monday after.
No, nope. It's next Monday.
It's next Monday.
Read the group chat, my friend.
I thought you said you needed Brandon.
All right. Well, do we have Aaron on the line here? All right. So we need to come up with a drop for you. All right. That's for sure. But Aaron Isumafi, Derek's sister, we all love her here. She is our official hockey correspondent. Aaron, what can you tell us? I'm going to ask a very general question because I didn't pay any attention. What's happening in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, they've started. It's got a similar timeline to basketball, so no one really pays attention, as it turns out. But I think, you know, I'm going to lead with, since the Sharks are up north, I'll start with them, but they are losing two games, or they're up two games on the Ducks, and so that makes me happy because I don't like the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, and they play tonight, don't they?
They play tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow, I'm sorry. Okay. I apologize.
They play tomorrow, but the Ducks are now going to San Jose, so not looking good for them.
I mean, whenever they changed their jersey, that was just downhill from them. And I was like, no, you guys are dead to me now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the Mighty Duck logo? No.
Yeah.
All right. So the Sharks are looking good.
Yeah, I refuse to watch them because every time I turn them on, they lose. So I'm just listening and reading print news from afar.
Are you a Sharks fan?
I am a Sharks
fan.
Okay,
just want to make sure. And they'll do what they always do, and they'll look really, really good, and then they'll break up. So.
Hey, they went to the finals last year.
Yeah, and did they win?
Yeah.
But they win.
Yeah.
No, that's what?
That's the first time they've ever done it in their franchise.
No, they lost.
Yeah, we're not handing out participation trophies here.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just
looking for that cup.
Yeah, all right, let's go back. What else is going on in the playoff race right now?
The other big story, I think, is the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
Yes.
And they're the most prominent season ever by any expansion team in any sport, at all. So they're beating the LA Kings. So the Kings are down 3-0. However, I don't think we need to worry too much because in 2014 they came back from 3-0, and that's the year they won the Stanley Cup. So crossing our fingers and hoping, the Kings can get it together.
And they were down.
They are not going to get it together.
Yeah, I'm a huge Kings fan, but this is just like their defense is not up to par what it used to be.
They totally blew it.
Quick is a damn good goalie, but man, he just cannot get it together because the defense just doesn't help him out. Just pucks going through and through.
Yeah.
Block
the
puck,
tons of saves, but it's too much. It's the volume is too much for him to handle.
Yeah, no, the offense definitely doesn't keep it in the other side of the rink, but that's what's going to happen.
How are the Nats doing? Washington, the Capitals.
Yeah,
the Capitals. Washington. They always the
Caps and Ass, whatever here.
Something to do with it.
They're actually not doing well. There's two games to the Blue Jackets, and they actually blew 2 goal leads and back-to-back overtime losses.
Oh, dirty.
Sounds like standard.
However, there is a little bit of controversy because they lost because of these ill-advised penalties, and as it turns out, penalties are up 17% at the same time last year. So there's about 10 penalties per game, whereas last year I think it was about 7 penalties.
Wow.
So the refs are really blowing their whistles.
Yeah, I feel bad for Ovi, man. It's my guy.
He just can't get it done in the playoffs.
Yeah, I do feel bad for that guy.
By the way, props to you, Aaron. That was a hell of a stat you had.
Thank you. I prepare very hospitably.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I was halfway joking when I asked you to be a hockey correspondent. I appreciate you taking it so serious. You're crushing it right now. What else we got going on?
Other than that, it's not that exciting. It seems to be going as it should be, other than the Blue Jackets beating the Capitals and other than the Ducks losing to the Sharks. So, Nashville favored to win it all, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Predators.
So Threads. I think. They lost last year to the Penguins.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But do you think?
Next week it might be more exciting.
Do you think Las Vegas could actually have the chance to take Nashville maybe 7 games or even beat them to go to the Stanley Cup playoff or finals?
I mean, I don't see why not. They've been playing amazing. Their goalie Fleury.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
He's killing it. He's amazing. I think it's a bit soft. Plus, they've kind of got that, they're the new guys on the team, so they really feel like they've got something to prove. And their season did start with that whole Las Vegas shooting, so I feel like they've got the country rooting for them.
Right,
definitely.
For sure.
Well, only problem is
for right now, no.
They have a terrible name, the Golden Knights. Like,
yeah,
come
just
on.
Leave it at the
so
Knights.
Neat.
I like that. Just Knights. Nice.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Golden Knights sounds like a generic.
Well, sounds like a Pee Wee soccer team.
Well, here's the thing. You have to think. It was the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. It might change just to the Las Vegas Knights later on down the road and drop the Golden like the Ducks did.
And I like the Las Vegas Mighty Knights. The Mighty Knights.
I like the Las Vegas Knights.
I just like hockey in the desert.
Yeah.
That's enticing to me.
There we go. All right, Aaron, we will check in with you 2 weeks from today. We appreciate it. Thank you, homie.
Thanks, Aaron.
Perfect. Hey, can I throw in one thing really quick?
Of course.
Since I'm doing unpopular sports, I don't know if you guys know, but today was the Boston Marathon, and Bez Linden won. She was the first woman to win Boston since 1985.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of a big deal.
There you go. Wasn't it like raining and like a downpour over there as well?
Boring.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Boring.
You know, your sister's really making up for your lack of effort.
Someone's got to do it here.
Aaron, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Anytime. Talk to you
later. All right. All right, once again, big thank you to Erin Isamaki, actually doing her job, which isn't really her job at all. But we asked her to be our hockey correspondent, and she took it really seriously. Our guests were on fire today.
Yeah, really good.
They're doing all the heavy lifting around here, and I couldn't be happier. anytime we get to take a break.
Our two guests and Grant are the MVPs.
Yep. Yep. They are the MVPs of the show.
Carrying along.
All right, so let's get to Statman and Brad's North State update.
All right.
He's got stats. And his name is Brad. It's time for Statman Brad's North State update.
It's growing on me, so that's good.
All right. So, this week in Chico State sports and basically NorCal sports all together, baseball didn't start out too well playing against Cal State San Marcos, a game they should have won. In the first one, they lost 6-8. They came back and won the next three, 11-7, 10-4, and 7-2. They were led by Louis Canjura, who went 6-for-19 and 8 RBIs over the series. And the big story this weekend with baseball, Cameron Santos went 4-for-18 with 2 runs and 1 RBI, but Cam gets his 200th career hit, only the second Wildcat to do so. The first was in 2002-2005, Jeff Walker. He has 226 hits. The Wildcats with their 3-1 weekend are now in third place in the CCAA with 20-14 in conference wins, 24-16 overall. They have 10 games left. So Cam Santos actually has a chance to possibly come a little bit closer to Jeff Walker's record or even beat it and become the all-time hit leader for Chico State. So that's a big news for baseball. Going into softball, Chico State is number 3 in the nation. Colorado Mesa number 1 and North Georgia number 2. Wow, Colorado Mesa is undefeated until this weekend. They just lost yesterday to the Regis Rangers. But North Georgia, wow, gets 2 wins this weekend. So we can expect maybe a little bit of movement. But since this is Colorado Mesa's first loss, I doubt it. We will see. So going into this weekend, they had a chance to possibly clinch CCAA playoff berth. It's going to happen anyways. It's just when was it going to happen? And also at the same time, Clint's the number 1 spot. And they did it. They swept Sonoma State, number 18 in the nation. They beat them 5-2, 11-7, 6-2, and 2-0. It was one heck of a series. I was there for the last day for senior day, and they played phenomenal in that last game. It was a tight, basically a small ball game, and they played well. Their first 2 runs were off just singles and a walk. Going into it, Bailey Atkins is your new single season home run leader with 12 home runs now over this weekend. Not 12 this weekend, but 12 total this weekend. She had 1. They have a new team shutout record, 16 shutouts out of their 42 games. 16 shutouts.
Wow.
Well done, ladies. And they clinched the CCAA berth and the number 1 spot. They have 8 games left, and they clinched it.
Wow.
They play Humboldt State 4 games in Arcata, and then San Francisco State in San Francisco 4 games. They've lost 3 games. They've lost 2 to Stanislaus State and 1 to UC San Diego. They have not lost back-to-back games yet this season. So, what can we see for them in the north, in the west region? We will see. Hopefully, we can see them make it to the Super Regionals and then the College World Series. So, that is our state update.
All right, wow. Statman Brad. Thank you, sir. Thorough as always. And once again, wow.
Go Cats.
All right, I think we can do this now, stat of the day. Should we do stat of the day? Let's do stat of the day. So, usually this is Brad's opportunity to shine, but
I'm actually curious.
You just shine. So, in honor of Derek being a Lakers fan, I thought you guys would really appreciate this one, especially Derek. So the Lakers, in the offseason, made a free agent acquisition and picked up Luol Deng. In your stat of the day, folks, Luol Deng this season had a total, not an average, a total of 2 points, one assist, and a paycheck of $17.2 million. So shouts to Luol Deng getting that money.
I feel like I could do that. At least 2 points and one assist in the entire
NBA
season.
Yeah.
I mean, you give me 82 games.
I was about to say, give me 82 games, yeah. I'll do it.
You can luck into 2 points.
Yeah, yeah. No, without a doubt.
Make one, miss one.
I was about to say, just be in the paint and just make some people jump. Yeah. Go to the line. Yeah. Yeah. Heck, I can get like 4 or 5.
And they could, look, I'll cut you guys a deal right now. I'll do it for half.
Same stat line, less money. I don't know what you're not signing me up for.
Exactly. So, any NBA teams out there looking to fill a playoff roster spot, holler at your boy.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Apparently, John can dunk, so, I mean, why not sign him? I feel like he can at least get the 2 points.
I did just get some new shoes.
Yeah. Okay, so, hold on. Let's stop right there. We need to update you guys. So, we have done a really poor job of following through. We talk a big game here, talking about practice, and we have zero follow through. So, John still needs to dunk, and I still need to dunk myself into 1 mile. These things need to happen before we all leave. So can we get this done this week?
Yes.
We'll see.
Well, I don't know. Are you willing to jump into 1 mile with this cold weather we got going on?
Even better. Like, that's some more.
Can we do a 6 a.m.? Yeah.
No.
No, I'm not getting up at 6 a.m.
No.
I mean, we got to do, like, 8 a.m.
Well, all right.
Yeah. I could do 8.
Okay. 2 more hours.
Maybe Thursday morning.
So.
7 in the morning?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. 6. You can do 6:30. I'll do it. Anyways, we'll talk about this off air.
Yeah, we'll figure it out off air. But we haven't forgot about it. We just have zero follow through. But we will post it on our social medias. You can follow us, TBP, not a game, on Snapchat. Or wait, Twitter.
Oh, we have Snapchat.
No, we do not.
Oh,
we do not have a Snapchat.
Dang it.
And Talking About Practice Radio on Instagram. We'll post in there so you can see me take this really frigid plunge and John attempt to dunk.
Not attempt to dunk. I can dunk. I did it this weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
On a 10-foot rim we're talking about.
There's no video evidence.
Yeah, where's the video?
All right. Well,
everyone has a phone these days.
Everyone
can get one person to pull out a phone.
Who's the weirdo at the gym just, hey, buddy, will you film me? I'm trying to dunk for my friend's back.
Have you not been to the gym?
Everyone's
filming. Hey, buddy. Yeah.
And I'm just saying, oh, there we go. Phone back on. Oh, doesn't want me. Didn't want to be on.
No, you're on.
All right, we're good now.
You're good.
But, yeah.
Don't be afraid to be the weird
dunk,
guy,
man.
In the gym.
You should be able to highlight that. Like, you should be proud to be like, hey, man, film me dunk. Watch me dunk.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay,
agreed.
You could prop it up, like pop it up on your shoe.
Okay, so what is coming of this? Can we get this out of the way? What is coming of it? If I can dunk, what are you guys
doing?
Nothing. I'll get you
nothing. You're just
getting
the satisfaction of us
water. Believing
you that you can dunk now. None of us don't believe you at this point. So if you want to live in like that little gray zone where you can't dunk.
Yeah,
but
it's just the gambler in you that's like, what do I get out of this?
Yeah, I'm a gambler.
Just pride.
I need some.
We'll figure something out.
You'll get something at Beach Hut.
Yeah, we'll figure something out off air.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got to be something embarrassing for us to do or something like that. We'll figure it out.
By the way, it's not looking good for your San Diego bet.
You know what?
I'm just letting you know. I'm not letting you forget that one.
Moving on. Let's do foot and mouth, y'all.
And now, it's time we take a deep dive into the world of soccer. The man responsible for such flashes of brilliance as...
39 was last year, and he could barely, like, throw a ball out of a barn cell.
It's time for Derek Hasselhoff's Foot and Mouth. No!
Ah, fantastic. What is up, everybody? That is right. It is time for a little foot and mouth. Football is the topic of our conversation today, as it always is in this segment. And in particular, we got to give our boys over at Manchester City a little shout. But first and foremost, give a shout to Manchester United for losing this past weekend to West Brom and ultimately giving Man City the championship in the Premier League. That is right. Your Man City, your citizens, y'all, they've clenched the Premier League. Good on them. They've been struggling so hard to keep up with Manchester United in this season. looked like it was about to come together. However, they're not going to lift the one trophy that pretty much every team wants out there, the Champions League trophy. They were knocked out of that one this past week, and in so doing, let Liverpool go on. So Liverpool is in the Final Four of the Champions League, along with Real Madrid, who got in on stunning fashion. I happen to be watching the Juventus game against Real Madrid, where Juventus crawled themselves out of a 3-0 hole to ultimately tie it up 3-3 in the Bernabeu as well. And yet, a penalty, or maybe not a penalty, doesn't really matter, it was called one in the box. Gave Ronaldo the spot kick inside, and he drilled it home to give to send Real Madrid to the Final Four.
That was crazy.
It was a great game. You were there for the end of it.
Yep.
Feel bad for you, Bay. This foot and mouth was supposed to have my buddy Will on. Will, who is a diehard Juve fan, has origins from the Italian world, actually knows his soccer. I'm sure he was it was up in arms when that happened, because they fought back so valiantly. It was crazy how they were able to, especially away, in the Bernabeu against Real Madrid, a team that is nothing but class when it comes to the Champions League. However, we're going to go to the downside of it now. We're going to go to their counterparts in La Liga, the good old friends of Barcelona, and their demise that they suffered against Roma, of all squads, the team that was the easiest draw in this past round. They had a complete and utter meltdown, lost 3-0 away in Rome, ultimately knocking them out of the Champions League. And this is a team, this is a season particularly for Barcelona that has been nothing but fantastic. They have yet to lose in La Liga, and they're set to claim that title rather easily, along with the Copa del Rey. Now, they could have been on for the treble. It was so easy for them to get the treble, get in that Champions League. All they had to go through is get through Roma, and then, you know, a little luck goes their way. They're in the finals, and bada-bing, bada-boom. You got yourself the trophy. But no, not today, Barcelona. Not this year. Welcome to the side of blowing a big lead. As a PSG fan, I don't know all too well. And that's what you get, Barcelona. You came back from 4-0. Now you get trounced by Roma. Roma of all squads. So you got Roma, you got Bayern Munich, who they're nothing but class on the German side, Real Madrid and Liverpool. And if, this draws our setup, kind of interesting story. We got Real Madrid versus Bayern. That's a great giant game right there in the semifinals. And Liverpool versus Roma. So your boys in red, Jarrell, have a good chance of making have a real good chance of making it to the Champions League final and ultimately clinching that trophy. And what a season that would be for them, for their man, Mohamed Salah. He is the man. He's not a myth, and he is truly a legend. That's Champions League, y'all. And that's foot and mouth for everybody.
Thank you, sir. As always, we appreciate it. As always, we appreciate you. Thank you for lending us your ears for an hour. We will be off next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. So some stuff will be decided in the playoffs. We'll have all sorts of stuff to tell you about our travels and all sorts of good stuff. So once again, from the guys here at TBP, thank you, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Oh, stay tuned for the show.
Game over, man. Game over. It's been real.
From deep inside your audio device of choice. This is the show. There are numerous news stories this week about what appear to be horrifying incidents in Syria one more time. There are not numerous news stories about what we have good reason to believe are a continuation of horrifying incidents in Yemen and in other parts of the world. And so to widen the focus of what we think is worth paying attention to, I have a special guest here on the program today. He's Dr. Homer Venters. He's a physician, and he's also director of programs for Physicians for Human Rights. And he came to my attention because I happen to be on a list that receives updates on some of what PHR is doing and witnessing in various parts of the world.
3-3 in the Bernabeu as well. And yet, a penalty, or maybe not a penalty, doesn't really matter. It was called one in the box. Gave Ronaldo the spot kick inside, and he drilled it home to give to send Real Madrid to the Final Four.
That was crazy.
It was a great game. You were there for the end of it.
Yep.
Feel bad for you, Bay. This foot and mouth was supposed to have my buddy Will on. Will, who is a diehard Juve fan, has origins from the Italian world, actually knows his soccer. I'm sure he was it was up in arms when that happened, because they fought back so valiantly. It was crazy how they were able to, especially away, in the Bernabeu against Real Madrid, a team that is nothing but class when it comes to the Champions League. However, we're going to go to the downside of it now. We're going to go to their counterparts in La Liga, their good old friends at Barcelona, and their demise that they suffered against Roma, of all squads, the team that was the easiest draw. In this past round, they had a complete utter meltdown, lost 3-0 away in Rome, ultimately knocking them out of the Champions League. And this is a team, this is a season in particular for Barcelona that has been nothing but fantastic. They have yet to lose in La Liga, and they're set to claim that title rather easily, along with the Copa del Rey. Now, they could have been on for the treble. It was so easy for them to get the treble, get in that Champions League. All they had to go through is get through Roma, and then, you know, a little luck goes their way. They're in the finals, and bada-bing, bada-boom. You got yourself the trophy. But no, not today, Barcelona. Not this year. Welcome to the side of blowing a big lead. As a PSG fan, I don't know all too well. And that's what you get, Barcelona. You came back from 4-0. Now you get trounced by Roma. Roma of all squads. So you got Roma. You got Bayern Munich. Who, they're nothing but class on the German side. Real Madrid and Liverpool. And if, this draws our setup. Kind of interesting story. We got Real Madrid versus Bayern. That's a great giant game right there in the semifinals. And Liverpool versus Roma. So your boys in red, Jarrell, have a good chance to make have a real good chance to make it to the Champions League final and ultimately clinching that trophy. And what a season that would be for them, for their man, Mohamed Salah. He is the man. He's not a myth, and he is truly a legend. That's Champions League, y'all. And that's foot and mouth for everybody.
Thank you, sir. As always, we appreciate it. As always, we appreciate you. Thank you for lending us your ears for an hour. We will be off next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. So some stuff will be decided in the playoffs. We'll have all sorts of stuff to tell you about our travels and all sorts of good stuff. So once again, from the guys here at TVP, thank you, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Oh, stay tuned for the show.
Game over, man. Game over. It's been real.
From deep inside your audio device of choice. This is Le Show. There are numerous news stories this week about what appear to be horrifying incidents in Syria one more time. There are not numerous news stories about what we have good reason to believe are a continuation of horrifying incidents in Yemen and in other parts of the world. And so to widen the focus of what we think is worth paying attention to, I have a special guest here on the program today. He's Dr. Homer Venters. He's a physician, and he's also director of programs for Physicians for Human Rights. And he came to my attention because I happen to be on a list that receives updates on some of what PHR is doing and witnessing in various parts of the world. Dr. Venters, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to be here and join you.
Thanks. The proximate cause of my paying attention to you in this way is your reporting, your organization's reporting on the plight. I'm sure no community of people wants to be understood as having a plight, but these people do. The plight of the Rohingya people in who used to be in Myanmar, what we used to call Burma, and are now located in refugee, most of them in refugee camps across the border in Bangladesh, I believe. Tell me a little about, first of all, what Physicians for Human Rights is, and then we'll get to what you know.
Sure. Physicians for Human Rights, or PHR, is an international human rights organization, and so we use the power of science and medicine to tell the truth about what's happened in human rights abuses. So we leverage the skills of doctors and forensic scientists, and we also train doctors and others around the world to use evidence to document the truth of what's happened. And so, you know, we were very active 30 years ago when we were just getting going in documenting the horrible impact of landmines in Cambodia really led to a really important treaty to ban landmines. There have been, since then, quite a few other places, really in Iraq, documenting sarin attacks by Saddam Hussein, up through Bosnia, the Balkans, I should say, and Rwanda, other places, using forensic medicine and the power of this type of documentation to tell the truth of mass atrocities, and also to train other people around the world to do the same thing.
So when you refer to Saddam Hussein and the sarin attacks, those were the attacks on the Kurds?
Yes, that's right. Habjala is one particular town where about 5,000 Kurds were gassed, and it was actually, I think, artillery shells with a combination of three different agents. But PHR forensic scientists were able to come in 4 years later, I believe it was, after the attacks. And it was the first time, actually, that anybody had been able to document the presence of the byproducts of mustard gas and of sarin in the soil and the other, like, areas around a village. It wasn't, you know, we didn't have ready access to any of these places, obviously, as the attacks unfolded.
Obviously, I'm smarter than that. But it does speak to the point that chemical weapons don't just go away. They leave residue and markers that can be identified sometime later.
Yeah, that's right. I think that, you know, the most effective documentation that we've, so for instance, the attacks last April in Syria by the Syrian government, you know, their samples were collected by UN and other inspectors pretty quickly, and that actually led to not only identification that sarin had been used, but what was really impressive was that the best evidence we have that's been reported in the press is that there is actual internal documentation showing that the actual sarin used and identified through laboratory analysis had already been cataloged as one of the Syrian government stockpiles back in 2013 when they were kind of forced into joining this convention against the use of chemical weapons.
So that was part of the stockpile that supposedly they gave up or destroyed.
Exactly.
So let's whip around the world and go to the border between Burma or Myanmar and Bangladesh and the Rohingya people. Just a little background. What I know is that the Rohingya are a Muslim minority in a majority Buddhist country, that they are regarded, at least by a segment of the population in Myanmar, as interlopers. They, I believe, have not been granted citizenship, even though they've been residing in Myanmar for decades, if not more. And that recently, in the last few years, there have been some demonstrations which have provoked or been used as pretexts by the army, depending on your interpretation, to engage in wholesale movement of the Rohingya people out of their homes, out of their communities, which have then been burned to the ground, and that they have been basically pushed over the border into some fairly unpleasant and unequipped refugee camps on the other side. Is that how close do I have it to what's been going on?
That's a pretty tight synopsis. I think that they are one of multiple ethnic minorities in Myanmar that's been subject to persecution for quite a long time. We at PHR, were reporting maybe a year and a half ago that we thought there were the precursors to genocide actually ongoing. Certainly in August, this wasn't the first time that thousands of Rohingya fled across the border to escape persecution and physical and sexual assault. But this obviously was a much larger and more coordinated campaign that was sold, or at least messaged, as an anti-terror campaign. But, we've had three field missions, doctors going to the Cox's Bazar area where these camps are, where you have about 650,000 Rohingya packed into a very small space. And we've been doing forensic assessments. That means hearing what people's account is, but doing physical examination of injuries and scars among women, among very small children, and men too. And we're putting together that evidence now, but it's very clear that in a particular in a couple of villages we've really dug into, that these were very coordinated campaigns that involved armed forces of the government of Myanmar acting in concert with local Rakhine civilians who are Buddhist, who are not Rohingya, to both lay out a campaign, that is to plan a campaign, to give ultimatums in the week or two before, and to escalate over months the baseline persecution, but then to lay out ultimatums about the acceptance of these identity cards that, as you referenced, would say, you know, would give up a citizenship claim, and then to execute these attacks, these really vicious, horrible attacks that, you know, clearly have led to the deaths of thousands, involved wide-scale sexual abuse as well, and then the pursuit of people across the border.
Rakhine is the name of the state, the province of Myanmar in which the Rohingya have lived for this period of time. When you say thousands of people, do you have any more precision of an estimate as to how many people may have been killed in this action so far?
Yeah, I think that we have, you know, some preliminary numbers. So Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, has done a preliminary analysis that's, you know, just south of 10,000, that through survey tools they've estimated the number of deaths. I think that we all think that that's conservative. We don't know. I think that there's a need for greater documentation, not only of the number of people killed, but, you know, we have seen so many survivors that have physical injuries that also clearly have been are survivors of sexual abuse, and that was just like in Rwanda and just like in the Balkans. It's clear that the wide-scale use and planning of sexual assault was part of this campaign to destroy and displace the Rohingya from Myanmar.
And when you talk to the people, I imagine you mentioned your people have been in Cox's Bazar, which is this fairly wretched refugee camp in Bangladesh. What do the Rohingya say they're told about why this is happening to them? What do they say that they're told by the army or whoever, whatever officials are encountering them and pushing them out?
Yeah, I've done a lot of these encounters myself, the forensic encounters with survivors, and, you know, people, we ask a lot of questions about what, you know, this sounds very horrific, but what were people saying as they were shooting you? What were people saying as they were raping you or setting your house on fire or killing your child? Because that information is critical to establishing some of the criteria for these mass crimes and establishing these very important criteria for was this widespread at all. And so I think that and was it systematic? Those are the two things we look for. And so people tell us that as these things were going on and in the run-up to the attacks, they were being told, not only do you not belong here, but you're not from here, you can't be here, you'll be killed if you're here. And it's, you know, because different military units and different groups of Rakhine Buddhist civilians were involved, we got, some comments being focused more on this land doesn't belong to you, you can't ever come back here. And another set of comments focused on you will be eliminated. You, your people will not exist anymore.
Did they include references to the fact that these people were of a different religion than the people who were talking to them?
Yeah, I think that the comments were often that we've collected. You know, we've done about 80 encounters with survivors, and so most commonly it was about the otherness of the Rohingya people, and part of it sometimes there were comments about the religion, but I think that most commonly it was simply that they were viewed as foreigners that should have no rights and should have no place in their own homes.
When did the Rohingya begin living in Myanmar or Burma, as it was then?
You know, I am not the most, I'm not the best historian on the history of the Rohingya. I will say that My sense is that the Rohingya, like a lot of ethnic minorities, were actually living in this space before kind of the current borders were constituted. And so the Rohingya will say, we didn't come to Burma. Burma came to us. And I've had more than one person, survivor, tell me that.
Are they physically different in appearance from the people, other people in the community?
I think that the thing that I notice as a layperson in terms of not being an expert in the culture is the language and also the dress. So, you know, as many of the women wear a different and more conservative attire, and then also, you know, we see that, to your question about religion, we see that some of the targeting of killings and sexual assault did revolve around religion. So I can think of multiple survivors who told me that one of the first people to be killed in their village would be the imam. Mm-hmm.
And they have been sitting, is probably the inappropriate verb, in that camp now, many of them for close to a year, if not more. Is that right?
Yeah, the violence really erupted August of 2017, and most of the exodus happened between the end of August and, let's say, the beginning of the middle or end of October. The Cox's Bazaar is the town, but then it's about 45 minutes outside of that town where you have this network of camps where they used to be kind of discrete camps that kind of stretched along this finger that dangles down along the Bangladesh-Myanmar border. And that little strip of land, now you really can't tell one camp from the other. So the names of these camps that a lot of people have seen in press reports, like Kudukulong, Balangkali, Thangkali, those camps all now just are one large mass of people, having gone from, you know, maybe 50, 60,000 people in all these areas in July of last year to 650,000 people now.
A good-sized city.
Yes, yes.
And you have people there to attend to their medical needs, do you?
So there are quite a few groups, a real, you know, Herculean assemblage of humanitarian organizations, Doctors Without Borders, MedGlobal, other organizations that are coming together to provide all the kind of essential services. But there are many challenges to that. One is that people are so packed together, much more tightly packed when you measure how much space, personal space, a person has in a refugee camp by square meters. You know, they have about half as much space or a third as much space as you would in a normal refugee camp, so people are very tight. The other thing is that it's very hilly, and it's about to rain there. The monsoon season is coming, and so what we saw just at the tail of last year's monsoons when people were coming over is, you know, these camps are very hilly. There will be mudslides. There's really a concern for a widespread outbreak of cholera, other communicable diseases that, you know, it's almost impossible, even with real dedication by the government of Bangladesh and the coalition of NGOs to stave off real, very dire health consequences.
Just physically, are they residing in huts or tents?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, they're. I know because probably two-thirds of my forensic evaluations have been done in these little living quarters, and as like a kind of like chunky white guy who's 6'3", it's a little tough to fit in, but they're it's actually incredible to watch people put these together. They take very thin slivers of bamboo, weave them together in a structure that could be, you know, 4 feet high, and then they will lace plastic, like just plastic that you would have wrapping plastic into these structures, and then they'll have some bigger pieces of bamboo for the main parts of the structure. And so these, when you look at the camps, when you really look closely at the unending horizon of structures, what these structures are these small, flimsy bamboo and plastic huts.
So obviously no heating, no cooling. They're in the whatever weather there is, and a bit of shelter from the monsoon at best, right?
That's right.
We'll take a break and then continue our conversation with Dr. Homer Venters, the Physicians for Human Rights, here on the show.
Some things I've heard. Everybody's crying mercy and don't know the meaning of a word. A bad enough situation is sure enough getting worse. Everybody's crying just as long as it's business first. Straight ahead, knock them dead. Back again, choose your hypocrite. Oh, you don't have to go on Broadway to see something plain absurd. Oh, everybody's crying mercy and don't know the meaning of the word. Everybody's crying mercy and don't know the meaning of the word.
This is Le Show. We continue now our conversation with Dr. Homer Venters of Physicians for Human Rights. The Bangladesh government finds itself now with the job of attending to the needs of a city of 650,000 people. What little I know about Bangladesh suggests that they're not swimming in resources to handle a job like this.
That's very true. It's one of the poorest nations, and also I think one of the most densely populated nations on the earth, now has an even more densely populated and even more poor cohort of people to care for. I will say that that I just recently was at an event where I was on a panel with a representative of the government of Bangladesh, and they have very publicly said, you know, we are a nation that does not have a lot of resources, but we will take care of the people that are here. And so there has been real, up to this point, generally very good interaction, I think, between the Rohingya. Certainly, I've talked to imams and village headmen and others who have told me it's very important to them to make sure that their colleagues, the Rohingya, understand and express how much of a strain this is on the government of Bangladesh. And because the risk of return is that they be killed or raped and killed, the Rohingya are at, you know, great, they take great pains to express appreciation for the safe haven, even in spite of some very difficult circumstances.
Just to give people a more rounded view, the country of Bangladesh is majority Muslim?
Yes.
So is it correct to say that the anti-Rohingya forces in Myanmar regard Bangladesh as their proper quote-unquote home, or that's where they, in the Myanmar version of events, that's where they came from, that's where they should be going back to?
Yeah, I can think of a man I saw who had both of his legs broken with a rifle butt by Myanmar soldiers, and as he was being beaten with his hands tied behind his back, the soldier were yelling at him, you're Bengali, you have to go to Bangladesh. And he wasn't the only person that told me that he heard that as either one was being shot or killed or raped.
How many times have you been over there?
Twice.
Mm-hmm. And how many people does your organization have available to be there from time to time?
You know, so the way PHR works is we have a relatively small staff of permanent employees like myself as the director of the programs, but we have a network of probably 2,000 doctors around the world, and so when I have led trips to Bangladesh, we have been able to mobilize primarily South Asian female physicians to come with us, emergency medicine doctors who have skills that I don't as an internist, and who are going to, you know, have a better, I think, quicker cultural connection with people on the ground. And so we have taken, I think so far, 7 or 8 different doctors to the area, and our plan is to continue to grow this cadre so that we can do more of this documentation, both for the advocacy that we need to do right now, but also for ultimate accountability.
The word accountability brings up, I think, what most Americans know about this situation, which is that Myanmar is supposedly being run now, although this is open to question. The military is still retains a lot of power, but run now by a civilian by the name of, Aung San Suu Kyi, who famously won a Nobel Peace Prize for her work over there. I think what people who pay just a passing attention to this story are struck by is that particular irony.
It's really a terribly upside-down part of this tragedy that someone who was recognized as a champion of human rights has, you know, through her own voice or the voice of her office and her spokespeople, called into question the veracity of women who say they were sexually assaulted by the military. So it is a horrible feature of this, but it does also support what we think is ultimately the needed step in accountability, which is prosecution in the International Criminal Court.
Who is empowered to bring those?
Well, that is an interesting question. I should say I'm not a lawyer. So
neither am I, so we're even.
Doctors love to talk about the law incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the basic understanding is that governments that are party to what's called the Rome Statute, who buy into the idea of the International Criminal Court, can refer also when they can't or won't do it, then the Security Council can do this. And that brings quickly to mind the horrible events we've seen in Syria for 7 years, where there is no doubt that there have been war crimes or mass crimes committed by the government of Syria, but that Russia has vetoed these ICC referrals and investigations 10 or 11 times. And so the question in Myanmar is it possible for the International Criminal Court to be activated or to jump in a way that doesn't require the support of Myanmar or risk a veto by China. And so it's, you know, comparing this to other places, it's early days in the process. So right now what we're focused on is really digging in, collecting the forensic evidence that we know how to collect, so that, you know, when there is a prosecution, we can contribute to the process.
China is allied with Myanmar.
I think that China has made statements in general questioning the need for any kind of international accountability mechanism. So to that extent, yes.
Let me just shift, because the what I said at the beginning is the attempt to try to widen the focus of our concerns about what's going on in the world. Has PHR had people on the ground in Yemen in the recent past?
So we are doing program work in Yemen. What we've been doing most recently is putting out reports about and tracking attacks on healthcare facilities, and that's something that we have been doing in Syria for a couple of years. We have a big map where we document attacks on healthcare facilities, hospitals in Syria, and we've started to do the same thing in Yemen by cultivating ground sources. And so because we've had some success in generating data that's reliable in Syria, we're working to establish a similar foothold in Yemen, which is a, you know, different campaign, but it's obviously a very horrible public health and human rights disaster.
And since your organization seems to specialize in forensics, it just occurs to me to ask, have you been called in any way to assist with the investigation into the apparent poisoning of the two individuals in the London Museum?
We have not. We generally are involved in documentation and also advocacy when not to say that these aren't violations, but they fall more closely into the realm of a crime than a human rights violation, mm-hmm. that is to say. And personally, as you know, like you and probably many, I've been following it with great interest, because it really is astounding.
It's astounding, and particularly the recent denouement, where at least one of them has walked out the door of a hospital, seemingly not fully recovered, but not what you normally think of as a victim of a serious nerve gas attack.
Yeah, that is a very happy development. I note that the perpetrators of this event will also have induced the ire of pet lovers everywhere, because I saw that the cat and guinea pigs in their house did not make it.
Yeah. How common is it, in your knowledge as a physician, for somebody to be dosed with a nerve gas substance, I don't know if you're familiar with this particular one, and survive it?
I think that the use of sarin in particular, or VX or other nerve agents, I think that it actually is quite an infrequent occurrence that it's used, and that it's often fatal when it is used, so I think that's a rare event. I think where I've seen some similar poisonings where people do recover is the kind of active ingredient in a lot